But if I only existed in that world as well, didn't that make me the same as the panther? Just code being processed in a computer system? I couldn't get my mind around it, and just shook my head, ordering myself to quit thinking so much. I quickly climbed down from the tree and cautiously approached the scene of the fight. My senses were on high alert, ready to bolt in the other direction if the Skinners came back. And the moment I stepped into view of the baby panther, its eyes went wide and scurried off back into the tree hole. The baby panther meowed loudly, increasing in frequency the closer I got to its mother. When I was within reaching distance of the larger panther, one of its eyes shot open, and it roared furiously and swung a weak paw towards me, trying to get enough energy to attack. But it was helpless, really. It was on its last legs. Still, the power of its roar was enough to make me jump back and tense up. "It's all right," I said softly, holding a hand up. "I'm not going to hurt you." The fallen panther stared at me with tired eyes and roared again as I moved in closer and crouched near its body. But it didn't make an effort to attack this time. I inspected the panther's wounds, and several of them were deeper than they appeared from further away, probably going deep enough to puncture organs. If I only had a health potion, I thought, then maybe I would have had a chance to save it. I reached in my bag and found my bandages, hoping that maybe I could negate enough of the panther's damage that it could survive. I could bandage her up, and maybe she would survive long enough for me to go back to the Mist Vale to buy a potion and return in time to fix her up. I reached for the panther's worst wound near its neck, where it was bleeding profusely. And the moment I made contact, the panther roared and made a sad effort to lift its head. "Relax. I'm just trying to fix you up." Just as soon as I tried tying the bandage around the panther's neck, the white fabric became soaked with the panther's blood and slipped right out of my hands. It was no use. "You have failed to bandage your target's wounds." Figures, I thought. I looked down at the large beast and whispered, "I'm sorry." The baby panther came crawling out of the tree and walked up to me cautiously. It sniffed at me, and then sniffed its mother, before climbing onto the top of my thigh. It meowed and looked up at me, then looked down at its mother and meowed again. "I'm sorry," I repeated. "There's nothing more I can do." The mother panther stared at me with glazed-over eyes and watched as the baby panther sat down on my lap, looking like it was unsure about the situation, but then it lifted a large, weak paw and gently rested it on my leg. The baby panther reached out and patted its mother's paw twice, right before the mother growled one final time and closed its eyes, passing to wherever things in Eden's Gate passed to. I took a deep breath and exhaled as I spat, "Fuck," saddened that I couldn't save the mother. I looked down at the baby cat and it looked up at me with its big green eyes, and then nuzzled the top of its head against my abdomen. "Name, a great panther. Race, animal, level, 1. Health, 10. Mana, 10. Stamina, 20. Status, friendly." I wasn't sure what to do with the tiny thing. I thought about walking a few hundred meters away from its mother, releasing it and letting it fend for itself, but I knew that it'd probably find its way back and end up getting killed or eaten. But whatever selfish ideas I was cooking up in my head were thrown aside when I heard the foliage rustling not far away and the unusual barking noise coming from the Skinners in that direction. I stood to my feet and gripped the baby panther in my arms as I ran. Chapter 17. Day 5. Earth. Aaron pushed open the door to Nexicon Inc.'s head office and walked down the hall past hundreds of empty cubicles and workstations. In the days following the launch of the Nexicon VR and the death of millions of people around the world, the company's stock had plummeted, and the multi-billion dollar empire crumbled amidst the threat of multiple civil and criminal lawsuits. Kendra was sitting in her corner office that overlooked downtown Los Angeles when Aaron tapped on the wall twice and walked inside. She turned her attention away from the television hanging from the wall and raised her chin at Aaron.
"What's the latest?"
Aaron asked, his voice more serious than his usual fun-loving self.
Have a look, she said.
On the television was an image of a SWAT team busting down the door of a small house. The police waved their assault rifles to several people whose eyes went big and raised their hands in the air. In the center of it all was a man in a wheelchair with a Nexicon VR on his head. His body was limp and he was slightly slumped over. On the floor nearby were several other lifeless bodies, young and old.
They're calling them transfer houses online, but the news is referring to them as suicide houses, Kendra said.
The image on the screen flipped to a male newscaster sitting behind a desk. Despite the nationwide order for all Nexicon VR units to be handed over to the authorities for disposal, reports are showing that only 65% of the machines have been recovered. After the government announcement of a federal ban on possession of these machines, the amount of voluntary suicides using Nexicon VR actually increased by over 500%, and people who are desperate to get inside the game are offering up large sums of money in exchange for visor usage. The image flipped to the President of the United States standing behind a podium, American flags draped in the background.
The people of America and around the world are facing tumultuous times. But with the swift help of Congress, we've managed to get permission from nearly every leader around the globe to move forward with our plan to combat this crisis.
The President paused and looked from side to side, creating tension in his speech.
We're dealing with a technology that, quite frankly, very few people understand. But what we do know is that we'll need the help of everyone to put a stop to it. Over the next 3 days, our goal is to remove as many devices as possible from the Nexicon CPU blockchain. That means a complete shutdown of both power, internet, and satellite communications, beginning with the most outward regions today and ending with a blackout here in the United States. During this time, only medical or structurally required technology will be allowed to run. Our goal is to weaken this CPU blockchain, they're calling it, to the point that it does not have the processing power to run Eden's Gate. We're now asking, demanding, for everyone to dispose of any Nexicon hardware you have and delete any Nexicon software that you may have installed on your phones, gaming systems, or personal computers. Once the grid is back online, we will closely monitor that no system running the Nexicon blockchain can come online and act accordingly if anything slips by.
The image flipped back to the newscaster in the suit, who started talking about the scale of the undertaking right before Kendra flipped it off.
You think they can really pull it off? Kendra asked.
Aaron pulled out a chair beside Kendra's desk and crossed his arms as he sat down, a somber expression on his face.
Maybe, he said with a sigh. Nexicon is global, but 95% of our technology is used here in the United States, so it's definitely possible.
Even if there was a single server room running the blockchain somewhere off the coast of Africa, it would still be enough to power Eden's Gate.
And that's exactly why their plan might work. If they really manage a global blackout everywhere outside of the United States first, that will increase their chances of containing the blockchain here. But 3 days is really pushing it to get other countries involved. Could be bullshit.
Kendra pulled her phone and flipped it to her social media account. I'm not so sure about that, she said.
She handed the phone to Aaron. At President of Philippines, 3 day blackout in effect beginning tonight at 10 p.m. For your safety, please make sure home is stocked with flashlights, supplies, and stay indoors during this time. Hashtag Stop Eden's Gate. Below the post were several other similar messages from other leaders of small countries, along with a bunch of bickering from a few gamers and geeks talking about their rights and freedom of choice. Hashtag Right to Choose, Right to Play. Aaron handed the phone back to Kendra and shook his head.
This isn't the way they should be handling things, he said. They're basically going to nuke everyone inside the game. That's what happens when 5 million bodies show up on the White House's lawn. How do you expect a non-gamer to believe people are really living inside of the game when they have no way of communicating with them. There's never been technology like this before.
There was a long silence as Aaron stared straight into the far wall and tapped his fingers slowly on Kendra's desk.
The communication port to Eden's Gate still works, right?
He finally spoke.
After I put Eden's Gate into demo mode, Dr. Winston was still able to beam his image onto the screen at the keynote.
Kendra rattled her head and shrugged.
Yeah, I guess it still works. But Rupert is the one who activated it at the keynote. Without his password, only he is able to open communication, and he's inside.
I'll go inside, Aaron suddenly said. Kendra darted her head back.
What? I'll go inside Eden's Gate. We still have a VR unit somewhere in here, don't we?
What are you talking about, Aaron?
Kendra shook her head, her face twisted in confusion. Aaron jammed his finger on the desk.
Who cares if they confiscate all the Nexicon VRs? If they stop people from going into Eden's Gate, then okay, great. But we can't let them just wipe out the blockchain with more than 5 million people inside.
They're dead, Aaron.
Their bodies are dead, Aaron countered. You of all people should know that. You spent time inside the game world.
Oh, I just walked around picking herbs, she said. I didn't even get past level 1. You know I'm not a gamer.
And neither am I, Aaron explained. At least, I've never been much of an MMO gamer, but I've been inside. And I know how real that world is. It's more than an MMO. Hell, I was planning on playing the game too before all this shit went down.
Kendra took a deep breath.
Okay. So you'll go inside and do what? Go on a fucking quest?
I'll find Rupert and tell him what's going on. If he can open a communication channel with Earth and show that people are really alive inside, I think the government will put an end to this crazy plan.
Kendra snorted.
You think you can find Rupert in just 3 days? The game world is massive.
Aaron nodded. It's definitely a risk. But I know the game mechanics better than anyone other than Dr. Winston. If I can get some NPCs or players on my side, there's a chance that I could get to his castle.
Kendra sighed. That's such a ridiculous idea.
Do you have a better alternative? Aaron asked. Or do you just want to let all those people die?
You'll die with them, Aaron,
Kendra stressed.
You want to give up your life here on Earth?
It's not really dying. I'd just be transferring over. And I'm not married, nor am I close to my family, like you. I'm just a single loner tech guy. Plus, if I don't go, I'll just be sitting in courtrooms for the next 5 to 10 years being scrutinized for my involvement with Eden's Gate. What kind of life will I have? Fuck that.
I can't argue with the scrutiny part, Kendra muttered.
So, I'll go into Eden's Gate. And I'll need you to get a computer turned on and listening to the communication port. If I can find Rupert and get him to open the signal, then it's up to you to get the broadcast in the right hands.
3 days is not enough.
2.5, depending on the time they shut things down. I need you to do this, Kendra.
Kendra breathed heavily and thought in silence for a moment.
If we're going to do this, it's gotta be staged like you acted on your own. I don't want to go to jail for helping you into the VR.
Aaron nodded.
Let's go get a unit and quit wasting time.
The two of them headed for the door, and when they stepped out into the hall, Aaron pulled his keys out of his pocket and handed them to her.
The small key is to my condo, and the digital key is for the BMW. Take what you want, but,
He twisted his face and scratched the back of his neck.
There's this virtual doll inside my closet. Can you do me a favor and...
I'll burn it.
Thanks.
Chapter 18. Month 1. Day 5. Year 1. I woke up to the feeling of something wet in my ear. I groaned and slapped at my lobe, only to make contact with a thick, soft fur.
Meow.
I shot out of bed and clenched the side of my head in agony at the high-pitched sound of the baby panther crying directly in my ear canal. Ever heard a baby panther meow or roar or whatever the hell their noise is? Well, it's ridiculously cute, but it's also absurdly loud. My eardrum was throbbing. Oh, come on, I moaned. I'm not ready to wake up yet. The panther jumped into my lap and started purring as it nuzzled its head against my body. It was hard to be angry at something so adorable. After running from the Skinners the previous night, I carried the cat back to my room in the Mistvale village, throwing off random fire blasts at level one creatures on the way. Thankfully, there were no other major incidents that happened, but it was pretty late when I returned. Most of the elves, other than the guards, had locked up their homes for the night. So I figured I'd call it a night as well, and crashed, after playing with the baby panther for a couple hours. The light of the morning shined through the tiny circular window of my miniature room, and I figured that the panther was probably feeling hungry by now. I knew I was. I stood up and started putting on my armor when there was a knock at the door. "Just a minute," I shouted as I slipped my leather chest piece over my head. When I turned around and opened the door, there was the gorgeous bombshell herself. Adelie looked serious, but even with her lips set in a straight line, I swear it was almost like sparkles fluttered from her eyes as she spoke.
"How was your first night in the Vale? Did everything go well?"
Yeah, I said, nodding my head. Being around a princess made me a little timid. "Everything's going well."
Meow.
The baby panther leapt up, digging its claws into my armor as it climbed my body and rested on my shoulder. Adelie looked startled.
"Oh, you have a panther."
"Well, no, I don't have a panther. I found a panther. I was hoping you could help me figure out what to do with him." The panther lifted its paws and started grabbing at my neck and nibbling at my hair.
"It seems like she's fond of you."
"She's?" I asked.
"You didn't notice that she doesn't have any balls?"
I cleared my throat and held back my embarrassment. "I guess I didn't look."
"Well, it's definitely a female panther, and if you don't want her, then you should probably return her to her family."
"Gone. Killed by Skinners," I said.
"Well, then you can kill her and sell her pelt, I suppose. That wouldn't be very noble of you, but you wouldn't be the first heartless human I've met."
"I don't want to kill her. I brought her here to save her."
"Then why don't you bond with her? Most humans get eaten alive when they try to tame great beasts, but you have one here who is already quite affectionate towards you."
"What do you mean, exactly?"
"You've seen how the elves have bonded with animals in the village, but we're naturally quite close to nature. It's usually quite difficult for humans to connect with large forest animals. Jax is quite the exception with Fenris."
"Large? This is just a baby." Adelie laughed.
"By my guess, that panther could grow to be twice the size of Fenris. Certainly just as powerful. Why don't you try bonding yourself with her?"
"How?" I asked.
"Give her a name. If she accepts your name, then you'll be bonded. But once you're bonded, then she's with you until death."
I turned my head towards the baby panther and it swatted the soft pad of its paws at my cheeks. I wasn't so much into the idea of taking care of a kitten, but she had already sucked me in with her cute eyes and tiny nose.
"What would be a good name for you?" I asked the cat.
"Meow."
"Sonia? Meadow? Shadow? Som?" I muttered. "How about Sora?" I raised my hand up and rubbed my palm over the panther's fur.
"How do you feel about Sora?"
The panther looked at me curiously, then tilted its head to the side.
"You are now bound with Sora. Your beast companion is bound to you for life and cannot be transferred to any other characters. Advancement. You have learned the skill Summon Beast. Summon Beast is a unique skill that is linked only to your bond with certain creatures. This skill cannot be improved or changed."
The panther jumped on top of my head and started pawing at my forehead.
I could almost feel its excitement as it played.
Sora is a nice name, Adili said.
I chuckled. So what do I feed her, cat food?
Cat food?
Adili asked, crossing her brow.
Bonded beasts usually enjoy eating food rations or other animals, but when you release them to the other world, they will feed and grow on their own.
Other world?
The bag I gave you, Adili said. You know it sends your items to another plane, correct?
Yeah.
It's the same place that bonded beasts go when you dismiss them. The astral plane, or the other world, is a magical place, and the magic will allow your beast to grow rapidly, and to a much higher degree than if you were just to keep her here. It's something that sets bonded beasts apart from other animals.
How do I release her? I asked.
Just look at her, and tell her that she's free to go. It's pretty simple.
And I summon her back how?
Summon beast doesn't require mana, but it's a channeling ability. Focus on Sora coming back, and call her name as you exert your energy somehow. So long as Sora is still alive and isn't involved in something pressing, she should come to you.
That's all?
Just remember to let her roam free sometimes, and treat her well. If you keep her in one place too long, she may lose sentiment towards you. Remain her master, but always allow her to be wild, all the same.
I turned to Sora and tested my instructions. Dismissed. You can go. Sora looked at me and purred a couple times before she jumped off my shoulder and started running for the corner of the room. When she reached the corner wall, she jumped, and her body suddenly faded into translucent speckles of light that vanished altogether. And I call her like this? I asked. I slammed a fist into my palm and started making the same motions that Jax did when he summoned Fenris.
No, don't do that.
Adili held her hand out to stop me.
You don't want to summon a beast immediately after you release them. How would you feel if you were called to work immediately after you were granted time off? Give her time.
Work? Pawing at my head was work? Okay, okay, I said. But she's okay, right?
She'll be fine in the other world.
She glanced about my room as if she were looking for any other random creatures that may jump out.
If you're ready, we can start for the Crystal River to scout out the camp.
I need to buy some supplies. I broke my bow in battle yesterday. I reached into my bag and began to holster my Mithanthar's blade.
That's an elven blade, Adili said.
Yeah, I looted it yesterday in the forest.
May I see it? Adili asked.
I shrugged and unsheathed the sword before handing it to Adili. She rubbed her palm across the blade.
It's a very powerful sword for your level. It should help you greatly in battle.
She looked closer at the hilt, particularly the shallow impressions on either side.
And two empty slots as well. If you add runestones, you'll get even more power out of this item.
Runestones? I asked. Adili sighed and handed me back the sword.
I keep forgetting that you know so little about this world, Reborn, she said as she reached into her bag, pulling out an oval-shaped stone with a flat surface. This is a blank runestone that you can find by mining, so long as you know the rune pattern for a particular power and have the correct inscription powder, you can imbue these stones and attach them to items.
Powder like this? I asked. I pulled out the red inscription powder that I looted the prior day and handed it to Adili.
Powder like this, indeed. Where did you find this?
Looted it yesterday as well.
Quite the find, Adili said. Inscription powder is quite rare and can usually only be made by dismantling magic items. Of course, if you don't want to bother with inscription, you can always buy runestones from a vendor, but very costly.
I see. Adili reached into her bag and pulled out a second blank runestone and a metal chisel with a blunt tip at the end. She handed me one of the runestones.
You've received blank runestone. Durability 10 out of 10. Quality average. Rarity rare. Weight 0.1 kilogram. A mysterious stone with lots of potential. Watch.
She held the runestone in her hand and started carving a symbol that looked something like a distorted upside-down Y. Once she carved the pattern, she blew the speckles of dust out of the crevice and held it up to me.
Can you copy this?
I shrugged. Maybe. I can try. I took the chisel from her hand and forcibly grinded it against the face of the stone, making my best effort to copy her pattern. By the time I finished, I ended up with something that was close to what she had made, but quite a bit more amateurish.
Not great, Adili said, but it should work.
She gave me back the inscription powder and indicated that I could keep the chisel.
Now, pour the powder inside the pattern and finish the inscription.
I popped the top of the small vial and started sprinkling the dust over the pattern as instructed. As the particles made contact with the stone, the inscription began glowing, and the stone felt warm in my hand. When the last bit of dust was poured, the powder seemed to shift inside the crevice, evening itself out. There was a slight alien-like buzzing sound coming from the stone, and then all of a sudden, there was a click. The powder solidified inside the crevice, and looked like it was part of the stone. Just now a stone with a bright red, oddly shaped upside-down Y.
You've received runestone of minor damage. +1 damage. Durability, 10 out of 10. Quality, poor. Rarity, rare. Weight, 0.1 kilogram. Advancement. You have learned the skill inscription. Write today's adventures in ink. Write tomorrow's victories in stone. Inscription is linked to the base stat intelligence. Increase your intelligence to increase your inscription ability. You have gained 1 point of intelligence.
You'll do better as you progress, Adili said. These smaller runestones are for weapons and armor, but a runestone master can build the large runestones, like the one I told you about above the palace.
I started to move the runestone near the hilt of my blade to see if it would fit. But once they were within a few centimeters of touching each other, the stone was drawn into the sword like a magnet and sat flush inside the hilt.
Hey, I didn't want to put it in there yet, I said as I tried to pry the stone back out.
Adili laughed.
Be careful next time. Runestones are permanent, and there's only a chance you'll get the powder back by dismantling the item.
Well, fuck. At least the 1 damage was showing up on the sword.
Don't worry. You've still got another slot, and the minor damage bonus you're getting from the rune is better than nothing.
I shrugged and sheathed the sword. Adili shifted her weight and sniffed in my direction, seemingly forgetting about our topic of discussion.
Have you had a bath? She asked.
A bath? There's a bath around here?
Of course there's a bath, and quite frankly, you smell like a dirty panther.
I groaned. Maybe I needed to put a few points in charisma. Where are the shower rooms? I asked.
What are shower rooms? She looked confused. You'll bathe under the waterfall, like everyone else.
Under the waterfall? I should have known that was the bath she was talking about.
Yes, of course. I'm sure you'll find it quite relaxing.
Bathing in the presence of a bunch of naked elves didn't sound relaxing at all. More like arousing, if any of the girls I saw the day before were there. Yeah. I'll put that on my list of things to do before we leave.
I'll meet you by the guards at the base of the palace in 2 hours. Make sure you have plenty of supplies, and you might want to have a bite to eat before we leave. Adventuring is never fun on an empty stomach.
Chapter 19. Month 1, Day 5, Year 1. During my bath with the elves, I found myself trying to focus on goblins, skinners, baseball, dirty socks, anything to keep everything, you know, down. The elves were totally comfortable with their nudity, just splashing about and cleaning off their bodies in full view of everyone, and the elven men seemed totally unfazed at all the boobage on display, or the fact that the girls could see their meat and veg. But when in Rome, do as the Romans do, they say, and I manned up and put on my birthday suit when I jumped in the water. It was actually quite nice, the freedom of it all.
I was surrounded by a beautiful landscape, dark green vegetation everywhere, large tigers walking along in the distance, and a whole town of people who seemed like they belonged together. I thought back to my life on Earth, my stressful job at Best Foods, my studio apartment, the repetition of doing the same thing every day, and I felt scared. But it wasn't for the same reason that I had felt scared the first day that I was in the game. I was actually scared of what it would be like to go back to my old life. 5 days in Eden's Gate, and nothing felt the same. Every day had been an adventure, and it didn't hurt that I could cast magic, carried a sword, and had crafting abilities. Hell, I even had a cute pet. I had no idea where my life would take me since I entered the game, but I felt so at home in my new world. The only thing I had back on Earth was Rachel.
Rachel.
Rachel. I opened up my settings menu and tried the log out button again. It had been a while since I checked. Nothing happened, as I expected. The reality that I was dead on Earth was really setting in. The likelihood of me surviving 5 days without food and water laying in one position was slim. So, how could I be alive? Maybe I was on life support. Maybe. Possibly. But that seemed unlikely. The only other alternative explanation was that it was all a dream. It sure as hell seemed like a dream when I was standing under a waterfall surrounded by beautiful naked elves. And although my acceptance was growing that the Nexicon CEO's broadcast on my first day in game was true, I still needed to find Rachel. I had no way of knowing if she had made it out of the game or not, but if she was inside of Eden's Gate, I had to search for her. She was my girlfriend, after all, and she was the one who had given me the damn headset in the first place. After my bath, I headed to Rise's shop in the village and bought a new bow and a new quiver of arrows.
You've received Elven Shortbow, 6-10 attack damage, durability 10/10, quality average, rarity uncommon, weight 0.5 kilogram. You've received Elven Arrows of Penetration, +2 attack damage, durability 10/10, quality average, rarity uncommon, weight 0.5 kilogram.
I also picked up 2 minor health potions, 2 bandages, 1 cure potion, and 2 food rations. Total damage to my purse was 244 gold after trading my old quiver, leaving me only 245 gold left. It was more than I was expecting to spend, but the bow was a huge step up from what I had before. After a quick stop at the food stand for another delicious elven pie and some water, I found Adili waiting for me by the rising path that led to the palace. A longbow was strapped to her back and a long, thin sword was draped at her side. She leaned forward and sniffed.
You smell better.
You're probably smelling the elven pie. Adili smiled.
The village favorite.
Her eyes wandered toward the route out of the village.
Do you have everything ready?
Yeah, I'm all stocked up.
Good, she said. And I brought you this from the library as well. You've received Scroll Fire Curtain. Create a wall of fire at a target location. Requires 15 intelligence. Fire magic level 2. Durability 10/10. Quality average. Rarity uncommon. Weight 0.1 kilogram.
Really? You're just giving me this?
You may be a reborn, but you're still a low level. I want us to succeed in our mission.
Adili started walking towards the exit to the village, and I followed as I started reading this scroll.
Advancement, you have learned the spell Fire Curtain.
Thank you. Adili didn't respond. She just kept walking straight ahead, leading us out of the village. So, we're walking to the Crystal River? I asked.
We're not going to walk. We're going to run.
Run? I asked. I've only got 100 stamina. I don't think we'll make it very far. Adili snickered and kept walking. What's so funny? Once we reached the edge of the village, Adili held her hand in the air and leaves rose from the ground as a gust of wind started circling both of our bodies. I took a step back and started swatting at the leaves. What the? The leaves tumbled back to the ground, and I suddenly felt like I had drunk a liter of Red Bull. My stamina bar was flashing,
and below my stats was an icon of a twisting green leaf.
Spirit of the forest. While traveling in forest regions, you draw energy from the nature around you, granting you unlimited stamina. Your run speed is increased by 300%. Spell duration, 20 minutes. Source, Adili.
As I was saying, we'll be running. Adili cooed and smirked.
Don't underestimate the power of elves when they're in the forest.
I lifted my knees in the air, and I felt light as a feather.
Whoa, this is awesome.
Follow now,
Adili said as she bolted away from the village. It was only a second or two before she was almost out of sight. I started running after her, and I felt like a human greyhound. The green in the trees of the forest passed by in a blur of motion, and I could just as easily jump, duck, and dodge over obstacles as if I were running at a normal speed. I managed to catch Adili and we ran together, side by side, traversing the vale, nearly as fast as when I rode on the back of Fenris. Adili had to recast the haste spell several times when it ran out, but after a couple hours we eventually reached Adenfall, and then a couple hours later we found ourselves breaking free of the forest boundaries and coming out to a wide bank with a long river that appeared to stretch for miles.
The Crystal River, Adili said.
The river was only about 50 meters wide, and the surface of the water sparkled brightly, shimmering like crystals when the subdued waves caught sunlight. On the other side of the river, I saw a side of Eden's Gate I hadn't seen before. Rather than tall trees and thick foliage, there were plains with rolling hills. Several trees were present, but they were smaller and far less dense than Adenfall. Far in the horizon, I could see mountains and homes scattered about. If it weren't for the fact that there was a massive tent with smoke near it by the river, and creatures that were obviously not human walking near said tent, I would have thought I was in the American Midwest. Adili pointed to an unoccupied hill that was nearby the camp.
We'll cross here and try to climb that hill undetected. Once we know what we're dealing with, we'll decide how we'll make our move.
I nodded. Adili wasted no time stepping down into the water and immediately started swimming towards the other side, like a nimble mermaid. I was a little less graceful, and the moment my feet touched the water, I fell submerged, surprised at how deep the river was. I pulled myself up and spit out water as I started swimming behind Adili.
Is there anything in the water I should worry about?
Yes, lots of things, Adili replied. So swim fast. Fighting in the water isn't fun, especially if you're a fire magic user.
Oh, fuck me, I spat as I started swimming faster.
Adili stood out of the water and seemed generally unaffected by the fact that her clothes were wet, and other than the fact that her hair was soaked, she still looked like a million bucks. She might have even looked more alluring standing there dripping from head to toe. Maybe one day I'd catch her when she was bathing in the falls. That shower from earlier really got the gears in my head turning. I felt miserable, however, when I exited the river. The water made the smell of my leather armor rise strong to my nostrils, and my feet squished as I climbed out to dry ground.
We'll have to sneak the rest of the way, Adili warned.
I know, I replied as I poured water out of my boots.
Hurry up, then.
I gathered myself up and shook my head in an effort to dry my hair before I sank down and started sneaking behind Adili. We made a half circle around the camp, ducking behind trees and crouching behind tall grass, but eventually made it to the top of the hill without alerting anyone. Below us was a huge piece of thin leather canvas draped over a few logs to form a rudimentary tent. At the entrance to the tent were two posts with human skulls sitting on top, and a few feet from the entrance was a campfire and around 10 creatures with wrinkled, sickly-looking skin, similar to the dead bow user I saw in Numbunga's cave. A couple of the creatures wore loincloths and had bows across their backs, but the others had small swords and bucklers and metal helmets on their heads. I wondered whose idea it was to give them helmets, but leave their chest and legs exposed. Goblin logic. The goblins were talking to each other in something that sounded like gibberish, and one goblin had another goblin,
I assume a female based on its thin, saggy tits, laid out across its lap, with its ass in the air, spanking it. It was a horrible, yet comical sight, let me tell you. But several of the other goblins were watching the show wide-eyed. One rubbed his crotch with no shame while another chewed on a large bone, with a piece of brown meat dangling on its end. The smell stemming from the camp was intense, even from the top of the hill. Urine mixed with rot, mixed with feces, and judging by the wet spots and brown circles of goo around the camp, that was probably exactly what I was smelling. I focused in on one of the helmet wielders.
Name, Goblin Fighter. Race, Goblin. Level, 5. Health, 40. Mana, 0. Stamina, 30. Status, Aggressive.
The scouts were the same level, but had 10 less health and 10 more stamina. In the distance, I could see two additional camps posted along the river, spaced a few hundred meters apart. They were far enough away that they probably couldn't hear anything going on in our location, unless there was a loud commotion. But they were close enough that it wouldn't take long to run there, or for reinforcements to come and maul us down.
How are we going to take out this many without getting ourselves killed?
You have been invited to join Adili's party. Do you accept? Yes/no.
So we can monitor each other's vitals, Adili whispered, ignoring my question.
I immediately willed myself to accept the invitation, and as soon as I did, three smaller stat bars with Adili's name appeared below mine. I also noticed that if I tried to inspect Adili, I got a screen with her basic stats, rather than the failed inspection message that I had gotten every other time.
Adili Vost, race, High Elf, level, 16, title, Princess, health, 170, mana, 130, stamina, 160, strength, 18, dexterity, 30, intelligence, 20, vitality, 20, wisdom, 12, willpower, 24, charisma, 67.
I wasn't shown her skills, armor, or resist rating, but it still gave me enough about her that I knew what I was dealing with.
So basically you're high enough level that you can just vaporize all these guys?
Level isn't everything, Gunner. If I were to get surrounded, it's quite possible these level fives could kill me. Unlikely, but possible.
She pointed towards the tent.
And we don't know what's inside there.
So then what's the plan?
The plan is to whittle their numbers down enough so that a close combat battle won't last long, and so there's little chance that one runs off.
Okay, I said sarcastically. How?
Adili pulled her bow off her back.
What's your archery level?
3.
Good. This is a level 3 skill.
Adili knocked one of her arrows, held it back, and closed one of her eyes. Her breathing stopped, and she looked like solid stone. After several seconds, she let the arrow fly, and it coursed silent as a ghost through the air and landed cleanly, quietly, in the back of the neck of a goblin who had walked away from the group and started for the back of the tent. The goblin fell forward in the grass, dying instantly, but the arrow didn't make a sound, and none of the other goblins were the wiser.
Nice shot, I said.
You're up next.
I pulled my bow off my back along with one of my arrows.
Which one?
I asked.
Wait for it.
Another one of the goblins eventually got up and strayed to the other end of the tent. It squatted and lifted its loincloth right before it started answering nature's call.
That one, Adili said. Pull your arrow back, close an eye, and put all your focus into your aim. Concentrate on hitting a specific critical part of its body, and don't release until your breathing has stopped and your hands are totally steady. What you're searching for is a completely silent, critical shot.
I did as she said and looked down the shaft of the arrow, concentrating on the spine of my defecating target. Like magic, my eyes felt like they were zooming in, and the details of the spot I was aiming for appeared much closer than they actually were. My breathing stopped, and my body was completely still. I released the arrow, and just like Adili's shot, my aim was silent and true, landing in the spine of my victim, causing him to lifelessly fall forward and shoot the last turd of his life up and into the air.
You have gained 90 XP. Advancement. You have learned the skill Snipe Shot. If they hear you, it means you missed. Snipe Shot is linked to the base stat Dexterity. Increase your dexterity to increase your ability to Snipe Shot. A landed Snipe Shot has a 100 chance to critical hit if you land it from a location where you're undetected, Adili explained.
Sick, I muttered, while noticing that only one Snipe Shot had drained my stamina by 30%. It wasn't something that I would be able to abuse.
Sick? Adili asked. You don't appear to be diseased or poisoned.
I shook my head. That's not what I meant. Where I come from, sick means that something is really good.
Being sick is good?
Adili's face twisted.
That sounds like something the Scourge would say.
I huffed. Sorry, it's hard to explain. Adili just rattled her head and turned back in the direction of the goblins.
No one else is wandering, so it looks like we're going to have to make our move now. If we can land two more snipe shots, that will bring us down to 6 goblins. I'll jump down while you stay up here and keep firing.
Got it, I replied. Adili drew an arrow and nodded her chin towards me. We both knocked our arrows, and I could hear Adili counting down softly.
3, 2, 1.
I focused in on another snipe shot, and the moment that Adili let her arrow fly, I let mine fly as well. Her arrow landed clean in the back of the head of the goblin's spanker, and mine caught the side of the neck of the goblin who was still happily toying with his goblin jewels. They both keeled over dead, arrows sticking out of their bodies, and it took a second before the other goblins realized what was going on and started drawing their weapons. By the time the goblins were alert, Adili was already scurrying down the hill with her sword drawn, and I had let another snipe shot fly, connecting with one of the scouts right in its mouth. The goblins rattled off something in their native language and started running towards Adili, but Adili raised her hand, causing green energy to encompass her fingertips and small vines to rise out of the ground, rooting all the remaining goblins in place. I was careful not to drain any more stamina, so the rest of the arrows were just regular shots, chipping away at the goblins' health as Adili rushed forward to fight up close. She made quick work of the goblins as they grumbled and growled, pulling at their legs desperately to get back in motion. Adili drew her thin, slightly arced sword and spun the blade around like a graceful acrobat, severing the head of 1, 2, then tumbling on the ground to plunge the tip into the heart of the 3rd. I fired a couple arrows into the female goblin, who was basically lying on the ground, unarmed, trying to release her mangled body from the vines, and a 3rd shot ended her life. By the time I looked up, all 10 goblins were dead. But stomping out of the tent were 2 larger goblins, at least 3 times the size of the ones who were outside.
Name, Goblin Brute. Race, Goblin. Level, 8. Health, 135. Mana, 0. Stamina, 75. Status, Aggressive.
The brutes had bulging muscles under their decrepit gray skin, and both wore plated armor only across their shoulders, loincloths draped between their legs. In their hands, they both wielded large axes with thick wooden handles and blunt stone blades. The 2 large goblins took in the scene, at first shocked at the fact that their comrades were dead, and once they saw Adili standing there, grayish goblin blood dripping from her sword, they both charged in her direction, and one of them roared. Adili rolled out of the way as one of the goblins swung its heavy axe down at her, kicking dirt up in the air as he missed. She rose to her feet, spun, and slashed her blade across the abdomen of the other, causing it to moan as it swung its axe in the air, missing her by a mile. I let an arrow fly as the uninjured goblin started running back towards Adili, and it stuck him in the knee, causing him to fall face forward with a thump and drop his axe. I fired 2 more shots towards the other goblin as Adili masterfully dodged its blows, and struck it again and again, piercing its torso to pieces. The goblin seemed to ignore my arrows as they plunged into its back, now swinging its axe wildly, desperate to hit anything. But its efforts were for nothing, as Adili dodged an attack and closed in, driving her sword deep into its body. Adili quickly pulled out her sword,
knowing that the goblin was dead, and dashed for the other goblin that was clawing for its fallen axe and pulling itself to its feet. In a show of speed, she swung her sword at the axe, knocking it out of the way, and then drove the tip of her blade deep in the goblin's skull. Granted, she was several levels higher than the goblins, but she still looked like a total badass out there. Adili turned, motioned her hand towards me as she started sifting through one of the brute's pockets. I swiftly got up and ran down to the carnage, grabbing as many still intact arrows as I could and doing a brief sweep of each body to see if I could find anything. I had limited slots in my bag, so I left all of the goblins' poor quality armor and weapons, but I managed to find 60 pieces of gold amongst the corpses. Inside the tent were 3 crates. 2 of them were filled with nasty-looking, uncooked animal meat. At least I think it was animal. And the other was filled with more crude weapons, another 50 gold, and a silver ring.
You've received Ring of Sturdiness, Durability, 7 of 10. Quality, average. Rarity, rare. Weight, 0.1 kilogram, plus 15 HP.
I bagged the coins and slid the ring onto my finger, feeling its magic slip into my body.
Over here, Adili called.
I turned and walked over to where the princess was staring down at a paper that was sitting on a table. There was a crudely drawn map on the paper, and at the top was something that looked like a black bird, and an arrow pointing in the direction of what looked to be Adenfall Forest. In thick letters was written, Keel Sparrow.
Keel Sparrow? I asked. What the hell does that mean?
Keel Sparrow, I assume. Orcs and goblins aren't particularly good at common tongue.
Who is Sparrow?
Adili's eyes wandered.
I have my suspicions, but I can't be sure. Maybe we'll find out more as we move to the other camps. Let's head out before someone...
Rawr!
I turned around to see a goblin, a bit smaller than the brutes, wielding 2 long, sharp swords, one in each hand. 2 leather straps wrapped around his body, and his legs were covered in thin cotton pants, but he was wearing no other armor. The muscles on his arms and legs were defined and his hulking chest heaved as he ran towards us.
Name, Goblin Berserker. Race, Goblin. Level, 8. Health, 120. Mana, 0. Stamina, 100. Status, aggressive.
The Berserker was fast, and I only had time to pull out my sword and block his first sword as he closed in on me, his other sword lashing out and cutting me against my chest. My armor absorbed most of the blow, but he did break into my skin, causing me to jerk back at the pain. Adili flung her sword out for the berserker's head, but the berserker ducked and roared,
Shredda!
The goblin spun on its feet with its arms wide, creating a deadly helicopter of blades. Again, I was struck by the attack, but Adili managed to jump back in time and avoid taking any damage. My health bar showed me at around 60%.
Shredda! Shredda!
The goblin continued to shout as it spun, and I reached out and shot a fire blast into the chaos, knocking him out of his move and causing him to almost lose his balance and fall. Adili took advantage of the situation and sliced her sword hard at the goblin's arm, severing it at the elbow, causing a sea of dark goblin blood to come spewing out. The goblin cried, and I sent another fire blast at the goblin's other arm, knocking its second weapon out of its hand, just as Adili lashed her sword across its throat. The berserker gurgled as blood surged out of its mouth and neck, and it fell slowly to its knees, then face first into the dirt below. Adili checked the berserker for loot and slipped a few coins in her pocket, before standing back and raising a hand towards me. Green energy pulsed off my body, and a flashing dark green leaf appeared below my stats.
Nature's regrowth. You draw upon the power of nature to regenerate 3 health per second. Spell duration, 1 minute or until fully healed. Your run speed is increased by 300%. Source, Adili.
Thanks, I said. The berserker gurgled again and there was a hint of movement that came from its body. Adili spun fast and drove her sword deep into its skull.
You have gained 185 XP. Advancement. You have reached level 6 and gained 3 attribute points. To assign your attribute points, open your status page. You can also increase any of your known skills by 1 level. Choose wisely, as your choices cannot be undone. You have gained 10 SP.
I pulled up my stats and assigned a couple points to my dexterity and a point to my vitality. After seeing Adili dodge so much damage and make goblin fillets, I realized just how much swift reflexes helped with swordplay. Vitality was one of my weak stats, and throwing an extra point in it would help round me out. The 1 LP went into my sword skill. I rubbed my fingers across my chest piece, and when I touched it, I noticed that the durability rating had dropped to 2 of 10, and was only granting me 12 armor rather than the 14 that it usually granted. I'd need to replace it soon.
"Hurry, before others come," Adili said,
tilting her head towards the tent exit. Chapter 20. Month 1, Day 5, Year 1. Adili and I ran out of the tent and started for the second camp, ducking behind various patches of grass. I wasn't sure if it was necessary, though, as once we got in closer, it seemed like everyone at the second location was too caught up with what was going on in their camp to care about what was happening around them. There was a tent similar to the one at the other camp, and a fire just the same, but surrounding the fire was a half circle of 5 orcs, all males around 7 foot tall each. They all appeared to be grunts, wearing fur boots, fur loincloths, and generally one or two pieces of other mismatching armor.
Name, Greenskin Grunt. Race, Orc. Level, 8. Health, 110. Mana, 0. Stamina, 120. Status, Aggressive.
Each had a single large metal axe latched to their backs, and they all sat watching the only non-grunt of the lot. The other orc wore a large plate helmet with 2 sharp horns jutting out of the top. He had a fur chest piece, leather boots, and a long black whip in his hands.
Name, Greenskin Slaver. Race, Orc. Level, 10. Health, 140. Mana, 0. Stamina, 140. Status, Aggressive.
A few meters away from the orc was a cage, and inside the cage was a skinny, pale human wearing only a pair of white boxer shorts.
"No goblins?" I whispered. "Orcs and goblins work together, but even orcs have trouble sleeping in the filth that goblins make."
"Then they're smarter than they look."
The cowering human clenched at the back of the metal cage and yelped, "Please, let me go." The onlooking orcs just laughed, and one of the grunts tried to mock the human in its deep, muffled voice.
"Please just let me go."
This caused another burst of laughter from all the other orcs.
"Okay, just kill me. I won't come back, I swear," the human said.
The slaver pulled his whip back and slung it at the cage, causing the human to slam backwards against the cage bars. The orcs burst into an even louder mirth.
"He wants to die?" I asked. "That's odd."
"He said he won't return after they kill him," Adili muttered. "He could be a reborn."
"I can't imagine that a reborn would want to die. Not after what I experienced."
"What other explanation would there be?"
"Maybe he meant that he won't haunt them, I don't know."
The slaver slung his whip at the cage again, and the tip slid through the cage bars, snapping against the chest of the human inside.
"Oh, fuck!"
The human cried as he clenched at the shallow skin tear the whip created.
"Just kill him,"
one of the orcs grunted as he stood up.
"Whatever he is, he smells worse than the goblins."
The slaver turned to the grunt and snarled.
"You don't give orders here,"
he snapped, pointing his finger.
"If he really is a reborn, Ergoth must know."
So he is a reborn, I thought. If it were true, that would make him the first real human that I'd encountered in the game.
All the NPCs I had met seemed so real that it was easy to forget that there were others like me.
"Ergoth cares not for reborns,"
the grunt countered.
"He only wants the Fellblade, and what?"
The slaver took a step towards the grunt and gripped his whip tightly.
"And there's no proof that he's a reborn. It's goblin hearsay.
The slaver slung his whip towards the grunt, cracking him against the arm, causing him to duck and flinch.
Dilug saw him return to the same spot the goblin killed him.